Good morning, Honorable Christian.
Good day. Good morning,
good morning, Chai.
Good morning, Malusi, Malusi.
Also, are we still waiting for the portfolio committee?
Yeah, I think they're still busy in wherever they are. They'll connect with us.
Yes, I think they were on the way. Oh, I think they just arrived now.
Morning, Miss Kaka.
Morning, Llewellyn.
Sorry, we're just running a few minutes late. So we've just arrived. So if you can just give us 5 more minutes.
All right, okay.
All right, we had that.
Morning, Honorable Chairperson.
Good morning, Llewellyn.
Just 2 more minutes and then we'll probably start.
Good morning, Chair.
Morning. Hi, Chairperson.
Metropolitan Police. Good morning.
I didn't have my breakfast.
But he was, when I went to my bed, he was
Can you call all of them?
No, we are back. We are back. Since the hour.
Proceed with the meeting from this side. But before we start, can we ask the fighter to lead us with a prayer? Namaste.
Yeah. Father,
can you pray for us?
The fighter, what is this? Where is the pastor?
We pray together. Father, we come before you in the name of Jesus. Father, we pray that you will bless our gathering in Jesus' name. We pray for your wisdom over us. And we also pray, Lord, that you will cover and protect us, Lord, each one of us in this room. Thank you for your grace and your mercy over the nation of South Africa, Father. We pray your peace over the nation. In Jesus' name.
You can't be like that. You can't be like that.
We must have passed that.
And then, any apologies, Llewellyn? Okay. Dr. Ando, any apologies from your side?
Good morning, Chair, honorable members and everyone present in the meeting. On the side of the Select Committee, I've got one apology, Chair, from Honorable Ndongeni. She's taking her mother to hospital. I think the other honorable members trying to join because I've got the chairperson at the moment. I've got Honorable Christians, Honorable Baha, and Honorable Maleka. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members on the agenda, we've got the ATP and the budget presentation by Umalusi.
Can we get a mover and a seconder for the next person?
I move.
Check. Thank you very much. Any seconder?
I second.
Okay. Thank you very much. Just to sit up. Can we not use mask rights when we talk all of us? Now I'm not gonna waste any time. I'm gonna give to the CFO to make some remarks and then immediately proceed with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, Mem Bingo Kigaba. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, also the staff that support you, that are doing valuable work. She doesn't tell the mask. Llewellyn is talking to me, Chair. I don't know what he's saying.
No, you can continue. We are with the noise. That's the voice after you.
So what should I do?
Continue. We'll be picking up what the problem is.
Okay. I need to also acknowledge the presence of the members of the Select Committee who are with us. It's not only the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. I want to acknowledge our staff also, the support staff. And the DG Mwede is here this morning. He's got, he told me that he's got CA, but I acknowledge him nonetheless. I wish to tender Professor Goldman's apology. He's not well. He underwent a minor procedure 2 days ago and is recuperating very well. Chairperson, let me just acknowledge the members of the Umaruzi delegation. We've got Mr. Emmanuel Sibanda, who is the Executive Manager for Qualifications and Research. He's sitting there. We've got Mayor Marie-Louise Madalani, who is acting Executive Manager for Quality Assurance and Monitoring, with Mayor Zodwa, the person that you usually see being unwell. We've got a new CFO at Umaruzi, Mr. Hendrik van der Walt. He's sitting on the right-hand side here, Hendrik van der Walt. We've got also in the delegation, Mr. Divisari Mateke, Senior Manager for Finance and Supply Chain Management. We've got Mr. Lakidita Unyani, Senior Manager for Public Relations and Communications. Whenever you see Umaruzi in the newspapers, on TV, on radio, it is the work of this gentleman. It is my pleasure to be the delegation, Chairperson, in the absence of Professor Foreign, to share with you the Umaruzi's 2021-2022 annual performance plan and the medium-term budget with the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education and the Select Committee on Education. We have just completed a challenging financial year. I think we are all witness to that. That is the 2020-2021 financial year, during which we had to do our work within the constraints of the COVID-19 pandemic. It is safe to say Umaruzi has been saved by God's grace until now. We have no casualties. We have people who are infected, but they have since fully recovered. Despite the hostile environment, we performed our service delivery functions as encapsulated in the revised 2020-2021 annual performance plan. The 8 PP we are presenting today is the second one in the implementation of the 5-year strategic plan. Therefore, we intend to continue with the delivery of our key focus areas and priorities as expressed in the strategic plan and use the lessons learned in 2020 to be more thoughtful and innovative in our operations. However, I must indicate that this plan is being implemented with severe budget constraints. Severe budget constraints. As you see in the presentation, our revenue that we generate ourselves has gone down because of lockdown measures. And also the subvention that we get from the department has also been reduced. I'm confident that the management of Umaruzi can implement this EPP as planned to achieve the intended outcomes. We've got a culture of hard work at Umaruzi. We work ethically and we are committed. I'm blessed and humbled to lead a team of such committed people. Council commits to hold management accountable, and we have quarterly council meetings and more regular ex committees where we are accountable to them. I'm now going to take you through the details of the 2021-2022 APP, and then with the Henrik van der Walt, the medium-term budget. Can you roll, Henrik? First of all, what we are going to be talking to are the following. The mandate of Humanos. I've given a summary version of the mandate of Humanos because we have interacted with the portfolio committee and the SLEA committee several times, so you already know our mandate. I'm going to talk to the strategic focus, and we're going to look at how we measure performance, and then Hendrik will take over, Mr. Hendrik van der Walt will take over to do the budget 2021-2022 to 2023-2024, and then I'll conclude. Chairperson, with your permission, we derive our mandate from three pieces of legislation. The first being the constitution of our country. The constitution says everyone has a right to education in chapter 2 of the constitution. The national qualification framework establishes Umalusi as a quality council with sister organizations, QCTO, Council on Higher Education, and the South African Qualifications Authority. The GenSESQA Act establishes Umalusi as a statutory body alone. Now, the role of Umalusi is to do a quality assurance for qualifications that are registered on the General and Further Education and Training Qualifications Framework, that is on the National Qualifications Framework. We ensure as a council that the providers of education and training have the capacity to deliver and assess qualifications and learning programs, and that they do so to the expected standards of quality. It's very important. Now, if I were to just briefly reflect on the 2020-2021, the implementation of the first APP of the current five-year strategic plan was disturbed by the COVID-19 pandemic. Our initial targets in the 2020-2021 APP were significantly affected. We therefore revised the APP, and the minister tabled it in Parliament in July of 2020. As a result, not all our targets will be achieved for 2020-2021. Despite these challenges, we have managed to remain focused on our five-year strategic plan priorities reflected below. And I'm going to be talking to those strategic priorities. The first being the reviewing of the quality assurance of assessment approach so as to accommodate new qualifications. New qualifications come in a different format from the old qualifications. Therefore, we have to look at our quality assurance of assessment approaches to accommodate the new qualifications. Evaluating and appraising new qualifications, the new qualifications being the GEC, General Education Certificate. Amending the founding acts to accommodate new qualifications and desired extensions in the mandate of quality assurance. We intensifying our research on educational developments to innovate and advise the two ministers accordingly, Minister Zimande and Minister Mutsheha. We intensifying the advocacy on qualifications within the staff framework. People have to know what those qualifications can do, what their weight is, what their currency is. And we're seeking an alternative funding model to increase revenue. Our revenue has been affected by COVID-19, and we have to look at an alternative funding model. We're in discussions with the department on this one. Looking at the external environment and looking at the strategic focus part B, COVID-19 has negatively impacted on evaluation and accreditation. It has impacted negatively on verification, certification, quality assurance of assessment, monitoring, advocacy, and research activities. We are stunted by the pandemic, but we continue to be resilient and willing to do our work. Umalusi is part of a process of amending the NCFA. We are part of that process regarding Umalusi's role as a quality council. on policy performance, ongoing policy performance based on research, in order for us to remain relevant and competitive, we have to do continuous research. Quality assurance approach. We are looking at innovative approaches on quality assurance in the light of lockdown. There will be continuous improvement of our quality assurance of assessment approaches. Because where it was easy for us to go to schools, to centers where diseases are written, we are constrained by COVID-19. We are growing in terms of the utilization of digital media platforms. Having said that, a continual external environment. Regarding qualifications, certifications, and accreditation, depends on the number of certificates issued for all five qualifications. Our numbers are counted when it comes to verifications of qualifications. The numbers are stable there. Eh? Quality assurance of assessment depends on the moderation of question papers, monitoring of examination standards during the writing, monitoring of marking standards, verification of marks for various subjects. We don't do business as usual in all those areas. Evaluation and accreditation depends on institutions granted certainly accreditation. We have to look at that. More institutions placed on window period indicating that they have very few issues to address towards accreditation. Therefore, we put them on the window period. Instead of declining completely to accredit them, we say, you are put on the window period, go and correct ABC, where there are fewer things to correct. Evaluation and appraisal of the new qualification. There are two new qualifications, the GEC, which is run by the Department of Basic Education, and the NASCA, National Senior Citizen for Adults, which is run by the Department of Higher Education and Training. Empowerment of women, youth, and people with disabilities. We do this through credit accumulation and transfer policy, where if you have acquired a qualification with another quality council, you can transfer the credits to Malus, and then those credits have to be recognized. Credit accumulation and transfer. We also empower the targeted groups with our supply chain management processes and staff establishment provisions. Let's look briefly at the internal environment. We are a small organization. However, I'm very quick to say we have a national footprint. We have only 140 full-time staff members who report to work to Malusi daily. We have workload challenges. The people there are overstressed. They work long hours. I sometimes ask them, why are you sending an email at 2 o'clock in the morning? They say, CEO, if I don't do that, I'm not being able to work. There are instances where my staff also say, leave. Just so that they can go and finish the work. Not to go to Devon, not to go to Cape Town. Just so that we can finish the work. So the people are really overstressed at Umanusi. People who leave the organization, they say, hey, now I have time for my family. I have time to use at my own discretion. They need for alternative funding to create more posts, to relieve the pressure from the staff. I'll be managing our vacancy rate at less than 10%. People will always want to move to other places. I must make an example and say, it was a culture shock for me coming from the Free State. There's no much movement, but head of education in the Free State. You don't have a lot of movement of staff because of the nature of the province. But if you operate in Gauteng, people are forever looking for, and there are a lot of opportunities in Gauteng, so we'll manage this under 10%. In terms of the facilities, the Umalusi 41 Umalusi House, that is the main building that we have always had. The plans are there on course. That is making the building friendly to people with the serious handicaps and so forth and so on. That is on course. Occupancy of part of the building has eased the pressure on Umalusi 37. I was talking about the RAMS, that is Umalusi 37, which is Umalusi House. But then we've got Tutosundo building, which we are renovating so that we can occupy the two buildings and ease the pressure on the one building that we have always had. That is very important, so that we allow also social distancing. In 2019-2020, we got a clean audit. And I need to emphasize that the message to my staff is that we're not turning back. You must get a clean audit. And I look in a particular direction when I talk about this. There are two gentlemen that I look at. I want a clean audit. And the budget cut, we experienced a budget cut from even the subvention that we get from the department in 2020-2021. We need more funds for ICT services to allow working remotely. There is a need to attract sufficient funding. This is despite the fact that we know that government is facing serious budgetary challenges, but we have to look at a model that will make this organization sustainable. We wanted to get more ICT equipment to enable service delivery during lockdown, migration to Microsoft 365, vulnerability management solution implementation, so that we don't have our system hacked. We're having data that is very critical for this country, the qualifications of people. So we have to always be upgrading the security features of our computer system. Communication, usage of 8 communication platforms, webinars for stakeholder engagement, where we address them and do advocacy on the work of human resources. Now, the output that we're looking at, as we measure performance, is we must have evaluated curricula. The curricula that we feed our learners in our schools must be evaluated. The qualifications for them to have currency, they must be verified qualifications that have international standing. Moderated assessment is one of the outputs. The institutions that operate here must be accredited so that we protect the South African population against people who are unscrupulous, who are just cutting corners, who make people who don't have qualifications to teach in the institutions. Standardized results and also output printed certificates. The outcome will be enhanced educational standards. The impact will be relevant and credible qualifications. That is a must for this country. It's a must for this country. I'm going to talk briefly to the different programs on our chair. Program one, the purpose of program one is to provide strategic leadership, management and administrative services to the organization. Sub-programs are strategy and governance, public relations and communications, ICT, information communication technology, human capital management and finance and supply chain management. Chair, the targets that you see in the next pages, you are there, Hendrik, are as reflected in the ADT. So I'll not go into the details. Suffice to say, we have to conduct advocacy webinars, even in the context of COVID-19. We have to ensure that the ICT health score is healthy score, because otherwise you are compromised. We have to maintain a healthy latency rate. People are forever moving. And I've realized also, much to my frustration, that Umalus is a poaching ground. The people just want people from Umalus to come and work for them. And one of the colleges is sitting in this room is the Department of Education. Oh, they are stealing from us. We want to pay the people that we owe within 30 days. And I've been in discussions with the CFO. The CFO is saying, to the CEO, we have to ensure that this happens. We can't be killing people's businesses. That is about program one. Program two, which deals with qualifications and research. The purpose of the program is to develop and manage an efficient and effective sub-framework of qualifications within the national qualification framework and to undertake strategic research in support of that goal. Now, we've got two sub-programs, qualifications, curriculum, and certification. The purpose of QCC sub-program is to manage the general and further educational training qualifications sub-framework of humanity, sub-framework of qualifications. Sub-program two is statistical information and research. The purpose of the SAIR unit is to provide a platform for research, statistical support and maintenance of learner databases to inform the council's professional work and organizational strategy. Now, if you look at the indicators and targets, we're looking at the number of reports produced on the management of qualifications in the sub-framework. We're looking at the percentage of L3 learner record for which a certificate is needed. We don't want to bring certificates that are errors. A certificate is a very important document. So we say 100%. Percentage of verification requests received that are completed in terms of the service level agreement, we are saying 2 working days. Number of research reports completed in various formats. Chairperson, I'm moving to program 3. Program 3 main purpose is to ensure that the providers of education and training have the capacity to deliver and assess qualifications that are registered on our staff framework of qualifications, and that they do so to the expected standards of delivery. Sub-program 3.1 is quality assurance of assessment schools qualifications. The purpose of this sub-program is to ensure credibility of assessment and examination results of school qualifications registered on the general and further education and training qualification staff framework. Program 3.2, quality assurance of assessment post-school qualifications, mainly with the Department of Higher Education and Training, to ensure credibility of assessment and examination results of post-school qualifications registered on our staff framework of qualifications. Sub-program 3, evaluation and accreditation. So quality assure the delivery of qualifications registered on our staff framework at private education institutions and the capacity of private assessment bodies like IED, Sakai, to assess these qualifications. Now, there, what we are looking at is the quality assurance of assessment reports should be published for qualifications registered on our staff framework. And we are giving the numbers there. Percentage of question papers approved per qualifications, 100%. They must be approved. Number of assessment bodies audited for their role, for their state of readiness to conduct examinations. We are giving the number there. Number of subjects for which verification of marking is conducted. Number of subjects, okay, you've turned the page. Number of subjects for which moderation of internal assessment is conducted. Percentage of accreditation outcomes for private education institutions finalized within 12 months of the site visit. Percentage of identified private education institutions monitored after being granted accreditation. Chairperson, with your permission, I want to hand over to the CFO to talk to the financials, and then I'll conclude. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. In terms of the budget overview for the 2021-22 financial year, Kumalusi's budget in total amounts to 175 million. In terms of the amount allocated, the DBE, the Basic Education Grant, is expected to decrease by 1% from the prior year. Our own revenue income is projected to increase by 14%, and the main reason for the increment in own revenue is, as CEO already explained, that our financial resources are under pressure and we need to improve strategies to increase revenue, and we hope and believe that with the lesser impact of COVID, our own revenue could increase, but the impact of COVID-19 continues to put the organization under financial strain. Now, in terms of the revenue projections, what we try to do, and I hope you can see it on the screen, is to give a historical background and also looking forward into the future to give you an indication with the focus then on the 2021-22 financial year. You say that the DBE grant will be 137 million, the verification of certificates will be 11 million, accreditation of providers will be 7 million, certification 6 million. We hope to generate interest if the country's economy is picking up, and we hope that with the figures coming out today of the status of our country's economy, it will assist so that our grading goes up, so that we can earn the interest, and then other income from quality assurance bodies at 9 million, and that gives us the total projected revenue income of 175 million for the current year. Now, this is just a graphical explanation of that, and you can see the significant impact that the grant that we do receive from DBE is having. This is the main source of income. But you can also see there from 2020-21 financial year, it was 139 million, and it's dropping to 137 million in the current year. and hopefully in 2022-23 will go up to 142 million. Now in terms of expenditure, obviously as an organization we can't have more expenditure than income. So we need to strike a big balance between what is our compensation of employees, or COE, versus our goods and services. As CEO already explained also, we are a small organization in the terms of number of permanent staff members, but we do extensively use external moderators and verification staff members. That is costing us quite a lot of money. And to ensure quality for the country's education system, we need to pay these monitors and verifiers a proper remuneration. And there you can see, and this is also, in short, and I'll come back to this, if you look at the split between compensation of employees and our goods and services, it used to be at the 60-40% split, more or less, but we're getting very much close to a 50-50 split, which is projecting an unhealthy position for the organization. In terms of the goods and services trends, what we try to show there also is historical information plus the future. You can see in 2018-19 we were at 103 million and we've brought that down to 87 million during 2020-21 and we project 89 million during the current year 2021-22. In terms of the compensation of employee trends, from 2019-20 it was 84 million. The past year it was 85 million, we project 86 million, and that's projected to be staying consistent over the MTF cycle, and that is based on the fact that Umalusi is also taking a directive from the Department of Public Service and Administration not to increment salaries and compensation, and therefore we are projecting a 0% increase in that over the MTF cycle. Then in terms of the comparison between compensation of employees and goods and services, what we try to do there is the blue bars is indicating compensation and the gold bars is indicating goods and services. So compensation is blue and gold is goods and services. And you can see for the current year, we are very much close to a 50-50 split and we want to try and change that position going forward because we do need more resources available than just to pay the salary. In terms of the expenditure per program, what we try to do here is to just to give a graphical explanation around that. You can see administration takes up 65 million or 37% of the budget, and this is mainly the full-time staff that we have there. The quality assurance of assessments, it takes the second highest portion up. And then thirdly, evaluation and accreditation. And in terms of evaluation and accreditation, quality assurance of assessments and qualifications curriculum, those are our core business activities, and the majority of the money goes into those three of the activities. On the next slide is just a further breakdown of the cost drivers. I think it's very important to note the big green portion that you see there, that's the honorariums. This is where we are paying the monitors and the verifiers and all of those staff, external staff members that we are having. Secondly, the curriculum review part, and then also our network and infrastructure on IT takes up 12%. You can just imagine that the security risks that we have that we need to very closely monitor, and the accessibility because we are serving the whole of the country in terms of certifications and so forth. So our computer resources are a very critical part to ensure proper service delivery to our clients in South Africa. In terms of the financial challenges, CEO already referred to the General Education Certificate and also NASCA, the National Senior Certificate for Adults. These are new mandates that are coming to Umalusi that we need to fund, and obviously there is a lot of additional costs in terms of that. And projects that require funding going forward is also the modernization of our ICT infrastructure. I mean, the dream is to have an a mobile app available where any person can actually apply to Umalusi for getting a copy of my matric certificate. And that will be the aim. But for that, we need a lot of financial resources because there will be lots of security access that needs to be ensuring that. And then also, CEO already referred to the refurbishment of Tutun Funda building. It is really essential that we have that building in order for our staff to be able to perform. And on that note, I'm handing back to the CEO for conclusion notes. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Andre. Thank you very much, Jefferson. I'm just going to do concluding remarks. We are committed to maintain a clean audit report as the management of Umalusi. And that much I said earlier, so I'm not delving into the details thereof. The achievement of APP target is part of the SMS, Senior Management Services Members Performance Agreement. So they have to achieve the targets. And the executive management at Umalusi will monitor the implementation of the APP and the utilization of the budget on a monthly basis. Overall performance and reporting will be monitored by the Performance Information Verification Committee, which is an internal committee at Umalusi. Internal auditors also assist us with this. We have quarterly review meetings chaired by the CEO with middle managers, senior managers and executive managers. And then oversight structures like the Audit and Risk Committee, Executive Committee of Council and Council will be doing that monitoring. Chairperson, I need to say something briefly, and I'll be very for the development from the side of the Department of Higher Education and Training. Minister Zimande is intending to bring the functions of the Matriculation Board to Umalusi. The functions of the Matriculation Board have always been with the University of South Africa, the former HISA. The HISA does not have a statutory standing. USAF is not a statutory standing. So the minister is planning to bring the Matriculation Board to Umalusi. We are in discussions with USAF, Matriculation Board, and the Department of Higher Education and Training, and we have alerted Mayor Jim Seha about these developments. What the Matriculation Board actually does is that if a person has done matric outside South Africa, in the UK, in the US, or Australia, or in Nigeria, Ghana, when they want to go to our universities, there has to be an assessment of that qualification that they obtained elsewhere to say, does this child qualify to go to our universities? So this dovetails nicely with the work that we are doing at Umalusi. However, we do realize that such transfers, such acquisitions, such measures have got their own complications because it would mean that the staff that used to work for the Matriculation Board will have to come over. They've got different conditions of service. We are using different IT systems to merge the two and allow the transfer to happen is going to be very complicated. And also, the cultures of organizations are not the same. But the major problem for me would be the budget, whether the Matriculation Board merged with Umalusi with the transfer, will it be financially sustainable? Because we have had one statutory body, and it's no secret, SAPA, having to retrench 50% of their staff because of the dwindling revenue as a result of the pandemic. Now, I had a meeting with the CEO of USAF, Professor Bauer, yesterday, and I indicated to them that to insulate Umalusi staff and to insulate the Matriculation Board staff who may come to Umalusi, the minister's side, minister's money, what we are going to do is we are going to run two separate accounts. While they'll be together in the same kitty, but we'll account for them separately. The revenue of the Matriculation Board will be recorded separately. That of Umalusi will be recorded separately, and even the expenditure for the next 3 to 5 years. So that if we have to retrain, we should be fair to our staff and say which leg of the business I'm retraining, which leg is failing in terms of revenue. Because I don't want my staff to say, you brought these people, you agreed that they come, with your counsel and the two ministers, now they are facing us. Now we have to be retrenched. So we are going to insulate ourselves like that, but we'll let the committee know when that move will be signed into policy. Let me convey my sincere appreciation to the Minister of Education, Mayor Jim Seha, the Deputy Minister, Dr. Regina Mahaune, and our Council for their continued support. And also thank the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, Mem Bingo Digaba, Chairperson of the Select Committee on Education and Technology, Sports, Arts and Culture, Dade Nchabeleng, for this opportunity to present the Umalusi 2021-2022 Annual Performance Plan and the MPF budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, members, that's the presentation from Umalusi. That's the budget presentation. I'm noting that the Morotesa and Masukers and Honorable Advance. Any hands from the virtual platform? Tadesuela?
Yes.
Any other hands?
Yeah, my hand is up. I'm trying to raise my hand.
Okay, Honorable Slim Dile. Is there any other hand that I might be missing? You can just speak through your mic. I only see those two hands on a visual platform. Can I allow you, Dr. Murateta, to proceed?
Chairperson and everybody in this all-important portfolio committee meeting, and then our partners in the struggle on education, the entity Umalusi, as led today by the CEO Dr. Mas as our government. Let me say thank you very much for this opportunity. I will start with the last page. We never stop learning. And then you see, you are making a very special and a very important recognition. You see, you have to be grateful to the Department of Basic Education led by Madam Njimutseka and the Deputy Minister. You have to be grateful to the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education led by the Portfolio Committee Chairperson, Madam Bingolika, and also such. You used to, because if you give thanks to individuals, you actually exclude the rest, and you actually put them at a point. And thank you very much for that. Chairperson, let's welcome and appreciate this very smart presentation. Okay, thank you. I was advised to switch it off for the sake of those on the visual. Thank you. This is technology, and I'm still going to talk a bit about it. And then, Chairperson, it's always encouraging to be honest. To listen and be part of Umalusi presentation. And then you know one thing I love with the doctor. Number one, he's very clear about his stuff. He's not guessing when he makes presentations. Number two, he is honest with some of the challenges that he made. He was looking around and looking for the Department of Basic Education, and then who are often poaching and then by way of taking. He's well trained and well oiled staff members. But you see, you don't have to look around. Mr. Mahata was here and the other team, they are here and I hope they are listening. They must limit some poaching. I know they dangle a carrot, which you are unable to offer. That is your weakness. You see, Chairperson, the impact of COVID-19 has affected one and everybody in one way or another. It's a fact. You can. But at the same time, to others, let us agree that the impact of COVID-19 has come as an excuse for people having failed to reach better heads or to do their job. And it is not so, I believe, with the Umalus. My general analysis, however, is that every event has got an opportunity and a lesson to teach us. I've learned this in life. Anything happening, be it a death case, be it whatever unfortunate situation you can learn in, out of that situation you can draw some strength if you are progressive in thinking. You see, we don't have to encounter an unfortunate situation and raise our hands and put our hands on the head and say, my babu, you know my way, it's all over. Hyper. There is always a lesson to learn out of any unfortunate situation. And the same, I would say, is the case with the pandemic. I'm coming with my question with regard to that. More than 27 years into our democracy, Chairperson, COVID-19, this is the strength which I want to expose. COVID-19 pandemic exposed the level of inequality to the Department of Education. It has exposed the level of inequality, thereby teaching us to accelerate on our endeavor in addressing some of those inequalities. You see, these inequalities manifested themselves and mainly in the provision of infrastructure. It exposed us that our infrastructure in the delivery of public, basic public education, and the provision of water and sanitation, let alone the human resource, is not on par. This happened when the department tried to come with this the distance learning through ICT and the technology. Number one, you would realize that we were exposed. There were still those areas which were without network. And then a professional center that even if you were to put that into manifestation, it couldn't fly. And again, you would realize that there were learners, scores of learners in the country who were without the gadgets. The smart gadgets. You were exposed. And I always say it is at the moment the level of exposure or the level of identifying the challenge that you are going to turn, will be able to turn the corner. You will never be able to turn the corner until you reach a point of challenge. On page 26 and 32, we are talking about some challenges. I will come to that. Now the question comes. Given this preamble that I've given Chairperson, what lessons have you as Umalus learned as an entity drawn from the pandemic? And what measures are you putting in place to address it? Icon, if you have not learned anything out of this pandemic and you have not come with the new innovatives to address it, then it means you still have got a lot to learn, especially from the pandemic. I'm saying so because I see on page 52, you are talking about the challenges, which is a good thing. Any report without challenges or any presentation without challenges and the recommendations, it's to me an incomplete report. Because you cannot present and say, we have got no challenges. And then what are you going to learn going forward? You are talking about some of the challenges as the increase in the mandate, increasing mandate, without funding. is one of the challenges that you are dealing. The second challenge, you are talking about modernization of ICTU infrastructure. I've in passing talked about how informatical the ICTU is affecting all corners. And the last point is the refurbishment of Tuto and Mfundo building. These are the challenges. But what is it in the main that you are drawing as a lesson from COVID-19 and measures in order to address C? Thank you, Chairperson. I'm done.
Okay, sir.
Let's switch off. I was so interested. You can benefit.
So we are all in for equal education. thank you very much for the presentation. I'm going to start with the one that has the longest preamble. And what I would like to talk about, I want to emphasize also what my colleague has said about the responsiveness of organizations has surely been tested during the COVID period, and the culture of the organization determines how it comes out of the crisis, whether it grows or whether it minimizes in impact. So I want to echo that sentiment in terms of just the answers around how responsive and what's the culture that would actually pull you through the challenges during this environment. There are a few things that are very important that I need to highlight, and I hope that, like with the National Senior Certificate for Adults, that this theme that I would start today will also yield the results in months to come. I have a very small school in the area that is my constituency, St. Peter's School. It has a reputation for learners that comes out of it that is excellent in maths and science. Their language proficiency, comprehension, children that comes from there remind you of the old mission schools. Our kids came out of the old mission schools. Very rich in history, very good understanding of history, rich culture, and very strong in mathematics. The issue that St. Peter's has that we over the last years try to address is that they are focused on the poor community in that area. But the cost of regulatory compliance on such small institutions and institutions that caters for low and middle income families are very high. The report by the Center for Development Enterprise issued a report in 2016 that showed compliance costs at learners in large schools was 391 rand, while it was 1,171 rand at small schools. Now, the cost of compliance for low-fee schools, 270,000, and 250,000 high schools. So if we look at that now, Bishops has a 20,000 difference between Bishops and St. Peter's. Now, that is anti-poor, because St. Peter's is actually aimed at serving a community that are working class, that earns much less. But because the passion and the vision of the school has been to bring quality education to poor learners in previously disadvantaged areas, when you look at that and you see the cost of compliance, then we say, but that actually does not encourage, or let's say it doesn't enable the smaller schools. The impact of that cost on them is very high. So my question to Amalusi is, what can be done? What can you do to reduce the impact of the regulatory burden on schools that cater to children of low and middle income learners? And please keep St. Peter's in mind. I would love to take you to St. Peter's. I love the school. COVID has led to a number of teachers being retrenched, and many have started small schools. These schools cannot afford to pay for regulation. Can you exempt small schools catering for special needs learners and low-fee schools from the fees that you charge? I think it links into the tribunal. I think it does link into that. Then I am very glad about the National Senior Certificate for Adults that is being prioritized. Can you please explain how this qualification will work, what work remains to be done,
And when we can expect the qualification to become available, can we receive a project plan and a regular update? I want to also say that, you know, sitting under a presentation with Amalusi, you always come under the impression of the richness of the academics that is present within the organization. So I also want to echo that, what my colleague has said previously. So when I speak about the national education, the national certificate for adults, senior certificate for adults, I want to emphasize that that is the doorway, as we all know. So I don't underestimate the fact that you know this. I am emphasizing. It is the doorway for many South Africans to a better future. So this certificate is very important in encouraging further learning, and I thank you for the progress on that. On slide 31, you mentioned that you face an increased mandate, but no funding. How much funding is needed, and how much has been allocated to the National Senior Certificate for Adults project? Or to put it another way, is this project fully funded? At slide 22, you project own generated income to increase by 14%. What are the sources of this income? And then my last question is really, I don't even know if I should put this question here. I think I need to maybe work on it. There is a need for us to look at what is going to be done around the professionalization of the religious sector, especially your independent religious institutions that there are hundreds of, thousands of around the country. Many of them that are yielding very good results in terms of the type of people that go out to serve our communities as pastors or as religious leaders. But for years now, it is an issue that has not really been effectively dealt with. How can Amalusi help for us to professionalize and to bring these independent institutions into the main so that those qualifications can become recognized? Because the people that it yields, many of the people that it yields, it really plays a vital role in our communities. But they walk out with a certificate that means a lot spiritually to show that they do have the integrity, they do have the character to complete a qualification for 2 to 3 years. But in terms of the qualification having any merit outside of the organization that they are serving in, it has no value. What can Amalusi do? And I know that you are under funding constraints. There is a challenge. But I also think that I must emphasize to Amalusi, the reason why we have the abuse of our citizens through spiritual churches is because of the lack of regulation. And part of the regulation has to do with qualified clergy. How can Amalusi play a role to address that need that exists within our communities? Thank you very much, Chair. There's just the last that was brought up in the previous meeting, which is the unplaced learners that was brought up by my colleague as well and I in the previous meeting. I want to bring it to the attention of the committee that the estimation is that there are 6,000 learners that have not yet been placed in the first quarter of this year in the Western Cape. So I just want to bring it to the committee that it is a matter that we must seriously attend. Thank you.
Another plot one?
Very much, Chaka Sen. And greetings to all honorable members and the officials that are in the meeting. The team from the policy, and thank you very much for the presentation and the update on your project. Chaka, I don't have many questions as the report is somehow, or the presentations are somehow going forward, and the CEO, Dr. Makula, has managed to explain and give more information on the opening. On slide 9, on the external environment, when you presented, I just want to find out whose targets were affected by COVID-19 after you have done your privatization of the only and what is the financial situation of the training? On slide 11, I just want to find out on the 140 staff that you have, do you have any people with disability as part of the staff? I just want to find out because that's how they work very hard as a staff in a very small organization that is performing not very well. And also this one is about on the slide. And then on slide 13, on the verified qualification, what is the general term for the verified qualifications? And also, as we know that there are many, bogus schools that are much more, especially in Gauteng, it was also mentioned on the meeting that we held with the Gauteng assignment. And how do you think it verify or inform, communities about those bogus schools? Because I believe that it has been something that has been going on for a while now, and it seems as if each and every year we experience the same thing, and there is no, much change that has been done to correct what is going for things. And then one other question is on the issue of the incident that happened during the examinations of 2020, I would just want to find out what is the intent of them at the level of the university as it stands now. Is there any challenges that the learners or the university are facing which that's it from problems that is spent? On slide 1, I really appreciate the information that you gave us about the partnership of the mission board. I'm sure when the time is right, we will get the proper update and the processes they all say that
will be unfolding. Let me put the chair. Thank you very much. Honorable Suwela?
Hello, Chairperson. greetings to colleagues and to Umalusi. I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
Okay, let me also join the other colleagues in welcoming the presentation and also congratulate Umalusi for the job well done in ensuring that the results came out and without any problems in the light of having leaked question papers. But then the question that I have for Umalusi, given the fact that there has been an unprecedented COVID-19 problem and the question papers were prepared long before that, the learners had to deal with that and the teachers had to deal with that. Is it not time probably to look at a situation where in future, if we have a situation like this, consideration should be given for the reviewer of the edge that requires that question papers be prepared beforehand in order to give effect to a situation like this so that the examiners or whoever is responsible for putting up the question papers should have the opportunity to review and reset the examination question papers for the benefit of the learners who are supposed to write such examination in the near future. Thank you.
Alright. Honorable Slindile, do you still have got network problem? But I think his question was there. His question is about vacancies.
I saw
this. Okay. Alright. Honorable Christian?
Thank you. Thank you.
And just a second question. Honorable Christian?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you can proceed.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. And good morning to everyone, and thank you to the Umalusi for the presentation. I just have three questions quickly. My first question is about the certification backlog. I just want to know with regard to the ICT errors and so on, especially at TVET colleges, how far has Umalusi come with regard to reducing that backlog? What are the plans for 2021, 2022 to ensure that that certification backlog is attended to swiftly? And what has been done to work with colleges in order to reduce that ICT error rate? Have they been working on it, and what is the progress on that? And then we are all aware of COVID, and we completely understand, and even in 2021, classes have now not fully resumed yet. Most classes are still being held on rotational basis. So my question to Umalusi is whether you are at all concerned about the possible lowering of academic standards then towards the end of the year, as students are attending on rotational basis, and there might be a concern with regard to syllabus not being completed. Lastly, with regard to the paper leaks, what is Umalusi's role in the verification to the extent of these paper leaks, and as well as the final certification and approval of those question papers where we have seen the leaks happening? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
All right. Thank you very much, Honorable Christian. I think those are the ends then on a visual platform. Okay, the issue that I want to raise, Doc, is the issue of your compensation of employees versus your goods and services. Because the reality is that it's almost 50-50%. And I know the CFO has mentioned that you are trying to work on it. But when you spoke, you said that the issue of you getting stuff to your account, it's something that you must do. So can you share with us the plans? What are your plans in trying to deal with that? But also you have raised that there is an issue of budget cuts, and yourself, you've got an interest money that you could see it, on your presentation. So how is that going to affect your day-to-day work as Umalusi? But rather than that, I think that we need to say that We have listened to your challenges, like you have mentioned, and the fact that there are factors that you couldn't reach because of COVID, which is understandable for all of us. I think we need to welcome the presentation as the committee and note it for ourselves then as the committee. So that's about it. I think other questions that I had have been covered by other members. So I will allow you then, John, to lead the responses.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to apologize to
Honorable Mulwana Sehla, it was not intentional to exclude the honorable members. I thought when I acknowledge the chairperson, by association, I'm also acknowledging the members.
It's time of ascension.
The poaching, I'll be honest, really, we're not poaching ground for the one that is hosting us. And I'm afraid if I talk too much about it, they'll throw us out. They'll say they'll go and hold a meeting elsewhere. So I have to be very careful. I do not want to be kicked out. The COVID-19, Honorable Tessa, you're right. It affected everybody. We are not making excuses for not being able to attain some of our goals, our targets, because we're very innovative in dealing with situations, even unprecedented manner. You know, and like they always say, every dark cloud has a silver lining. We learned things that we would not have learned if COVID-19 did not come. We used to have, for instance, an example, quality promotion meetings that would be held in major centers in South Africa, Polokwane, Cape Town, Port Elizabeth, East London, Devon, Bloemfontein, Kimberley, where the staff would have to travel and organize accommodation, even conference facilities for the people that will be doing quality promotion meetings with. Now, what is happening is we're able to do it online at Umalusi, and we cover 3 provinces at a go without any expenditure whatsoever. So we've learned a lot through this period, and the staff at Umalusi, like I said, I don't know to overemphasize, they were humbling with the way they worked very hard. It's like we are from the same mother, you know. It is the culture of the organization. And people who don't want to work hard don't stay long. They just realize that I'm at the wrong place. Because there's work, there is focus, and we don't deal with the peripheral issues. The phrase is no. We deal with the core business of the organization. So we're working very hard on our transition. You're right. The COVID-19 also exposed the levels of inequality. Talking about infrastructure, water sanitation, ICT gadgets. What I've learned with this experience is that our education system in South Africa is resilient. If you look at the outcome of 2020 results, you see that we are resilient as a country. I was expecting a disaster. But when I look at the figures at the organization level, I realize that it shows that people are working hard from grade 1 to grade 11 so that grade 12 does not become a problem, like we were overtaken by COVID-19 last year. And one other thing that we have to thank ourselves for as a collective is that we do not trim down the curriculum. That question also arises from what Honorable Swell is saying. We didn't trim down the curriculum. We did not trim down even on our standardization approaches. For that reason, and this question has been asked by one of the members of Canada, for that reason, the universities have got no qualms with the students that graduated last year. I've not had a single complaint. Had we trimmed down the curriculum, had we changed our quality assurance approaches to water down anything to favor the candidates, the universities would be having a problem. We must pat ourselves on the shoulder for that stance, which stance I really support even now. Our system is such that people work hard from grade 1, 2, 3, even the foundation level, and it will show at grade 12. The key quality assurance of assessment was done differently last year. State of readiness, where people would actually drive from one province to the other to check the state of readiness. This time around, it was done online. It was only in instances where we announced, where we sent individuals to go and verify that.
And it was not, a super spreader event. It was delayed. One individual, go and verify whether what they are giving us from the field is true or not. And go and ask these questions physically, in local. One other thing that we have learned out of COVID-19 is that I've been complaining myself that the times for quality assurance in December are too compressed. The time allocated is too compressed. And the investors were saying, no, we have to start our programs in mid-January. We have the results first week of January. So the results this year were released in February. And nothing has collapsed, thanks to COVID-19. So there are many lessons. I could go on and on about the lessons that we have learned. And we find ourselves that we are a good country, very resilient people. Indeed, Honorable Sugars, we want another nation that is agile, that responds to any crisis. And I've made a few illustrations of how they've done that. And maybe coming to the NASCAR, I need to indicate that we're planning to have a pilot in the DHET this year and with implementation next year. However, because of COVID-19, we have had to shift the goalposts. We have had to shift the goalposts. And we are going to do it in 2023 now. And it's understandable. However, I need to indicate that we're still worried where we are sitting as a quality assurance board with the readiness and the preparedness of the DHET to implement this qualification. And as a quality assurance board, we will keep on saying to them, but this is not ready. That is not ready. Please attend to that. So we are still waiting for the DHET plans to be submitted to us. And I want to say I'm still worried when I'm speaking with my curriculum experts about the progress that the DHET is making with regard to this qualification. With regards to St. Peter's, a very humbling testimony that we've given about this school, that we've got educators who are committed to that extent to uplift our communities, and that is commendable. The issue of the regulatory fees that we charge has been on the table of council for quite some time. That the institutions that can afford should be given a concession. I don't remember off the cuff what this decision is. I want us to send a response to you, Chairperson, to all of the speakers, to say, what did council decide on institutions that can afford to pay the regulatory fees? However, I need to qualify that by saying, we support pro-poor policy, and county system, I didn't realize. Yeah, we support that. However, we should note also what the Constitution says about independent schools. And I'm going to read from Section 29(3) of the Constitution, which provides as follows. Everyone has the right to establish at their own expense, my own emphasis, at their own expense, independent educational institutions at their own expense. So like if you want to venture into operating an independent school, leaving the public schools that are available in a community, it must be at your own expense. For as long as you don't discriminate on the basis of race, is registered with the state, and maintain standards that are not inferior to the standards comparable to public educational institutions. So we move from that premise of the Supreme Law to say people who say they are going to operate their own schools should be willing to pay. However, I'll give you a more comprehensive response in writing. And also the results, like you say, are commendable. We'll look at that as well. Having said that, we have to do a calculation to see how much funding we need to make this organization. But just to paint a picture, our budget is less than 200 million cash in money. Yet we have to quality assure a system as big as ours with a national footprint. And sometimes I say to myself, guys, we're making bold pronouncements on the credibility of the results, this and that, on a very small sample. It can be risky. So we are looking at a model with the department, which could be cost recovered. Say, we have registered 1 million students. There are 1 million students who are going to write. We are going to quality assure the million and pay us for the million that we quality assure. And that will go to IEB, to go to Sakai, to go to the department. In that way, it will be sustainable. Because we can increase the fees within inflation to ensure that we sustain an organization. But at the rate of people, 200 million, less than 200 million, we from Cape Town to Messina, from Springbok to Richards Bay, really, you can see that that is very small. That is why my staff is overstretched. That is why people live with Malusi. Very good people. We live with Malusi, and when they across the fence, they say, hey, I have time with my family. And that organization is recommending the same. Yeah. Regarding the programs that are offered by institutions where certificates don't have currency, I'm going to mention a few institutions that are doing the same work, who have complied with the requirements of SAQA and the Council on Higher Education and not humans, because that is beyond the scope of humans. I'm going to mention here Heidelberg College in Somerset West. Their qualifications are accredited by CHE. They appear, once the student has graduated, they appear on the Southwest National Learner Record Database. They've got Canadians in this country. They are BTH, they are DA communication, they are business administration qualification. There is another in Cape Town, also Cornerstone College, are fully accredited. So that if these seminars want to be compliant, they must approach CHE, not much at this time, but that is beyond our scope. You also maybe know about the South African Theological Seminary. They are doing a good job. Those that are doing a good job without giving students the qualifications that have currency should be encouraged to follow this approach. Indeed, Honorable Adwans, we are affected in many ways, and I'm going to repeat some of the things. We did not visit the schools as usual. The last time I flew to Cape Town was last year in March. Not flown to Cape Town. Not to go and do any monitoring, any work of humanity. I've not been to Parliament. So we don't visit schools the way we are used to. We don't visit examination centers the way we used to, and so forth and so on. Traveling has been affected. Having said that, one would expect the budget to be showing a positive, because we're not spending on accommodation and traveling. But we have to buy ICT equipment to make everybody be able to work from home. So, we're going to buy PPEs at the office. At the moment, we're maintaining under lockdown level 1, 50% of staff, with all directors, senior managers, executive managers, and CEO reporting to work daily. We can't work daily, but that's for the staff they locate. And my senior managers are monitoring that on the day when a person is waiting from home, he's got clear targets to deliver on. You are not on holiday. You are not on leave. If you want to take leave, apply for leave. But they are given work, and that is monitored by my senior managers. We don't have anybody with disability to manage. And it will be difficult at the moment to accommodate such a person. We can only accommodate him at Umaruzi House on the ground floor. But his movement will be limited, because he can't go to the other two floors. We just come through parking and go into our office, and that would be constrained. So that is what I said in my presentation. We're looking at making our building friendly for the people with handicaps, so that there should be lifts, there should be ramps, and so forth and so on. So we're working on that with my colleagues. We have advertised, and we have not actually excluded anybody because of disability. Whenever we advertise, we say we accommodate people with disabilities, but we don't get people coming from that side. The verification of qualifications, there are two, we have to use the correct nomenclature. There could be two things that we're talking about here. It could be to check whether the six degrees that I have is authentic or not. That one, 10 a long time, 3 days. That one is, because at the click of a button, you can verify, but you verify with accredited institutions, because we're dealing with people's personal information. You can't allow anybody who wants to verify. If I'm an employer and I want to verify, I go to the institutions that are accredited by Umaruzi to verify. The other side of your question could have meant verification of qualifications for registration on our self-framework. That one is a long process, because the qualification will be submitted to us. We'll look at it, critique it, send it back, and say, you correct ABC. They bring it back, we still find some gaps, we return it. Until we are satisfied that the qualification is properly packaged, then the council will approve that it be registered with SAP, mm-hmm. then we'll apply to SAP. I think for the benefit of the House, I thought I should also explain that. Honorable student, the vacancies at Umalusi are kept at less than 10%. But with the experiences that other organizations have, we have agreed with council that when vacancies arise, we are not going to automatically fill in the posts. Not under COVID-19. We are going to have the senior manager consent motivate why we can't freeze the positions for some time, not destroy it from the strategy, not remove it from the strategy. Just freeze it so that we are sure that we remain viable as an organization. And only fill it later once our financial position is improved. So we've got, I think, two positions now that have been frozen, but we have got many others that have been filled after they become vacant under COVID-19 to say, no, this one is a must, we have to fill it. So we apply our minds in that way. And we don't want to have retrenchments. It's a very painful experience. I sit in the SAPA board, and it was a very grueling experience. We have to tighten our belts. I'll go to Honorable Clindle again. You're asking about how COVID-19 has affected our operations. I need to indicate that under levels 3 to 5, the organization was operating remotely, completely remotely. Under lockdown level 1, like I said, 50% of the staff rotate. In 1 week, a person will come twice. And the following week, the following week will come twice. And then they'll alternate like that. But as for these ladies and gentlemen that are here with me, we come to the office daily. We are operating on a hybrid model of direct contact and online contact. We keep on watching the space to check whether we can now open the organization fully or not. But as things stand, we don't think it is advisable. That way is knocking. Honorable Adams, you speak about unaccredited institutions. The unaccredited institutions, it is difficult for us to identify ourselves because of our capacity. We run in Joburg, we run in Cape Town, but we don't have a policing arm to do that kind of footwork to go and identify those institutions. But immediately they are reported to us. We alert the police, we alert the twin parties immediately. So we also do advocacy at the beginning of each year. December, January, we do advocacy so that the parents on radio can hear what they have to check when they register their students, their children at the institutions that are private. The incident of the Peter League has had no impact to the credibility of the NSC of last year. Because of the approaches that we took, the research that we did to check whether the students were going through, we did some statistical figure crunching to check how has this learner been performing all the years, how has he performed now, has he been favored by the league, and the universities, after our pronouncement in February, they are happy. There are no questions that linger. Those students are comfortable at the universities. Yes, indeed. With Honorable Adams, we keep you posted on the education board. The two ministers will finalize it. Once Minister Zimande makes a pronouncement, and will indicate how it's going to affect us. We'll give you even the figures of what we got from the reverse of the education board and how the operation is going to work and where are we going to accommodate it. For now, we are going to accommodate that under Program 2 if Minister Zimande signs. Am I right, Zimande? Yeah, under Mr. Zimande. The branch, to be a unit under the branch of Mrs. Sibani. Honorable Suela, I've touched on this, but I want to come back to it again. The problems caused by COVID-19 and the possibility of changing the question papers. As a quality assurer, I would discourage that approach. Because we'll be sitting now with the class of people stigmatized. So they know, nothing. The universities will be taking them lightly. We're competing with global village. Where they go to the UK will know that they didn't complete the syllabus. The question they are watered down. Hence I'm saying, what we have to stand ourselves and give ourselves a pat on the shoulder as a country, as a collective, is that we stuck to our guns. We say we are not going to give our children anything less than quality. So I really stand, you know, this I like this topic with a passion to protect the integrity in the currency of the qualifications. The Honourable Kilindile, the Tibet certification backlog, the DHET is now talking about day zero, that there will be no one left behind now with the certificate, and that much is appreciated. You will appreciate where we sit in the value chain, that it is the DHET that generates information, data, and through CETA they upload the data to us to issue the certificate. But because we're a quality assurance body, at the time when the certificates are sent to us, the data, we have to verify and check the authenticity. So if we find something wrong, we send part of the data back to say, no, these ones are not correct, these ones are going to approve. Because you can imagine what was going to happen if we just approved it. We're going to have a lot of people who have qualifications that are not credible. So we have given them the protocols, the DG is only DG of DHET, and we will only issue a certificate if we can vouch for its quality, so that we protect everybody else who's got our qualifications. We depending on what happens this year, we still stand a chance that the children will not complete the syllabus. But my message is still clear, Honorable Slindy, that we want to still test our children, let them study on their own, and they do well. They did well last year under the difficult set, unprecedented, unforeseen. They did well. If you undergo an operation and you've got an anesthetic, who's going to make you sleep? You are the person who has completed the anesthetic. When I get onto that plane, that bumpy plane from Bloemfontein to Joburg, I want the pilot to have finished next week. If it's not finished next week, I'm not getting to that place. In fact, I'm going to be checking the qualifications before I get in. Say, hey, pilot, did you pass the thing? It is not getting in.
I'm not getting in. You have much more than matric to get into that place.
One of the speakers, you don't know how powerful the NSC is. People with MBCHP, with PhD, they come to us and say, I've got all this qualification, but they still want matric. And we have to, if they slot the matric, we still have to issue. They still want it. Powerful qualifications that we have. Okay, Honorable Mbingo Ligaba. The personnel, non-personnel split is really worrying. Like I indicated, we are facing some posts, which is not healthy because already people are under threat. But we are trying to save them from retrenchment. Retrenchment is worse. I better be of sugar threat. I better work extra hours rather than to go and sit at home and do nothing. So we are doing that. We are in discussions, as things stand, with the DBE on a different funding model. It's a pity there was instability on the side of the CFOs. The CFO resigned. We had a few people acting. So the follow-through with the DBE has not been good. But now we have Hendrik appointed. We'll start with those discussions so that we are saying with the funding model, I've actually said it, that they have to pay for everybody who writes and not part of people who write. Because what has been happening in the past is that they'll pay a certification fee. A certification fee would mean out of the million that is rating, if only 500,000 pass, we have quality assured a million, but you get paid for 500,000 that has passed. It's not fair. Our quality assurance is on. We don't only quality assure, we don't trust. Those debates we're going to engage in. I hope I've been able to answer all the questions. I might have missed one or two as I was taking notes. For that, I want to apologize, Honorable Chairperson.
I think my question around the exemption of fees, specifically for the smaller schools, is that going to be included in your written answer to me?
Exactly that.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, mine was a progress report on the difficulties that you have on the building.
Oh, on the building. Okay. We've got two legal cases, and I better just speak briefly about them. One is on the IED. They don't want to pay for the quality assurance fees. You see, they don't pay. You see, the parents of youth learners who go to their schools are taxpayers in the country, they claim that they were not notified on time, and we can prove that they notified them on time. So it is in the court, and we'll be pursuing that matter, because as they said now, they owe us 5.7 million. 5.7 million. Because every year we bill, we still don't pay. We bill. On the other hand, we've got Sakai. It is paying. It is paying. So it is unfortunate that the IB does not see any light in paying. And then coming to the people that we are pursuing, contractors who are doing work at Umarusi, the matter is in for arbitration. The latest communication I had is that they've had 3 arbitration meetings. And that this arbitration has to be concluded by July. Am I right to say this? Yeah, in July it has to be concluded. I'm saying people take government for granted. So say they can get money from government and do nothing. And I take a very hard stance on that. If it were my money, I was going to pursue it. The government's money, if the taxpayer's money, just be pursued and followed. And if those guys are found guilty of anything, we are going to make sure that they get the list. Never to do business with government. Thank you.
Very good.
I love
that. No, any follow-up from the vision? We forget you that you are there before. Jefferson, anything from your side? Dr. Tabele?
Okay. I think they are no longer there. Let's allow you to then to...
I also want to appreciate my just to clear something, we steal from each
other. Yeah, you are right, you must defend. No, thank you very much. I think we have had a good deliberation. You all and the team. And like I said, we are welcoming, we are noting the plans for this financial year as the entity of DPE. And thank you very much for coming on this physical meeting. It's not an easy decision to take to come to this meeting, but thank you very much for being part of this meeting. We appreciate all the effort. We understand you've arranged even something for us to eat. thank you very much for that. For the gratitude that we've shown. We are humble. On that note, then. You want to say something?
No, I was seeing also we very appreciated and also welcome the new member.
Oh, yes.
Of the team for the first time we have with him.
Oh, yes.
It must be very good to see the
good. Is he not coming from TV?
No.
Okay, no, welcome. Say we are working very well with you. Let my both profs and Dr. Akomensi. On that note, then we are closing this meeting. Members, we need to quickly move to Zays in Centurion's Zays offices. So we've asked that you just take a takeaway and get into the bus, please, and then we move so that we can start that side as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you,
Member.
Thank you. Thank you very much, the doctor. Not isolated.
No, like I said, the member.
There are consequences.
I forgot.
I'm
But we can't leave it like that. It's just my researcher. But we must maybe ask our research researcher to double check.
I can see that you are in contact with one trade official. You and I are introducing the hardcover. I don't know.